Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans, and welcome to episode number 133 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is September 1st. We are in September 2010. And this week on the podcast, we, of course, are going to talk about USC and Hawaii. Tomorrow, September 2nd, USC opens the season Thursday night, national TV audience on ESPN. We finally get to talk about some football games instead of sanctions and appeals and all that kind of stuff. We get to talk about some football. I'm really excited for that. If you have any questions or comments, and we got a lot of them today, so we'll try to get to every single one of them, drop us an email, podcast@uscfootball.com, or drop us a voicemail, 206-888-6755. That number again is 206-888-6755. That's three eights in there, 888-6755, if you missed that. Yeah, leave us a voicemail. We'll play it on the podcast. We got a few of them today. We'll play. We'll play your questions, and then Coach or Dan Weber and myself will all answer those. So wanted to thank a special man, Coach Harvey Hyde, joining us again. Over 2 years, he's been kind enough to come on with us every Wednesday. We just love talking to Coach. How you doing today, Coach? You're not in any exotic locations.
Man, I tell you what, I'm not on any secret location. I'm back. The party's over. It's football season. I've been working out all summer, getting ready for the summer, and I tell you, I'm ready to go. I tell you, there couldn't be a better time of the year. There really can't be. You come off a vacation, kids are going back to school, college campuses are open, Labor Day weekend. I mean, how can it be any better than this? The weather's absolutely beautiful. The USC team opens up in Hawaii, so for all the people that want an extended vacation, they can go to Hawaii early or stay later. Watch the USC Trojans play. I mean, how can it be any better than this? And, you know, for people that didn't use Southern California Ticket Service to get over there, maybe on the next trip that they plan on going to, Ryan, they should use them.
Yeah, if you're going to Minnesota or any other road trips for USC, Oregon State, go to Southern California Tickets, sctickets.com, 1-800-888-7287 is their phone number. We are starting the football season. So if you need any tickets, go to our friends at sctickets.com. They will help you out. Coach, how are we both here stateside and all everyone else is over in Hawaii? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, I have a reason. I tell you what, I am a part of the pregame show for the USC broadcast. And on away games, we're going to be doing them from the Arcadia Mall there, David and Buster's there. So I have to stay. And I'm on 2.5 hours before the game, so I'll be on at 5:30 this week. That's tomorrow night. Game time is at 8 p.m. I'll be on with Steve Mason. So on away games, I sort of have a camp over here in the Arcadia Mall, and we go in there and we do the entire broadcast. They do the post-game shows in there, the whole thing. And then on Sunday morning, I've got the Trojan Brunch Show that I do from the Shade Manhattan Beach, and that's on ESPN2 from 9 to 11. A.M. So, Ryan, I don't have time right now. You might have been thinking I had a great vacation, which I did, but now it's work time. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday and Sunday shows. So I've got a lot going on now, but I'm looking forward to it.
All right.
And you, of course. I forgot you, and that's on Wednesday mornings. And then on every day of the week at 6:45 a.m., I do a sports update on KDWN Radio in Las Vegas. So I'm pretty busy.
You are a busy man, Coach. Well, we're going to be busy on this podcast as well, and we got a lot of questions, so we might as well jump into them. Before we start talking about Hawaii, this was an interesting question that we got from John Carroll. I don't think he's related to Pete Carroll, especially because he's asking you about coaching, but he wanted to know. He worked with teenagers for 20 years in counseling and organizing camps for underprivileged kids. He played football for 8 years and would like to try coaching. What would be the best way to get into that, and how would you start?
Well, if he hasn't coached football before but played football, the best way to start is you decide what level you want to coach on. There are always schools or Pop Warner leagues and so on are always looking for coaches, people who love kids, people who want to work with kids and watch kids grow. And I tell you, you can go to these Pop Warner League organizations if you want to work on a higher level, if you want to work on a high school level. You go to your local high school or a high school that you'd like to work at. You call, you make an appointment with the coach. You go in and you tell them exactly your background. You say, I just want to be on your staff. I don't expect any money. I just want to work. You pay me if you can. Pay me anything you can afford. I'll do anything you want me to do. If you want me to go pick up your laundry, I'll go pick your laundry up. If you want me to be the water boy, I'll do that. But I want to learn football. I'll run the scout team. I'll draw the cards. I'll do whatever I have to do to be a part of football because I love the game of football. But it doesn't make any difference, Ryan, what level you coach on. Because if you're really dedicated and you love the kids, you're just as excited when you win and you're just as sad when you lose. So you got to remember it. You got to start almost as an intern. I've hired so many people who have just come and worked for me and impressed me that when I had an opening on my staff, I said, you know, why should I look anywhere? I know this guy. He's loyal to me. I'll just hire him. He's learned my way of doing it. Why should I teach someone else? So if you go and you give that effort to someone, that person always comes back and helps you. Or I've had young people that have come on and worked with me, and when other coaches have called me and they say, hey, Harv, I'm looking for a recruiting coordinator. Do you have somebody? And I say, I got an intern here or a GA here or an assistant coach here that's been working for me. He would be absolutely awesome. Let me give you his name. I recommend him. Talk to him because I'll tell you, I would hire him if I had an opening. So you've got to be able to sacrifice to get the things you love to do. Never, I used to tell coaches when I used to interview coaches, I used to say the first thing if a guy asked me how much does this job pay, I'm really not interested in him. I want somebody to say, hey, pay me what you think I'm worth after I'm here. Because that's the way I feel. I want this job so badly, I'm not worried about what it's going to pay me. So, you know, you got to go out, you got to reach out to somebody, you got to let somebody know you really care, and the coach won't care how much you know. He wants people who are loyal, he wants people who like kids, and he wants people who work hard, and I think that's what people are looking for. So, believe me, there's people out there that are looking for people who want to get into coaching like that.
All right, well, John, hopefully that helps you out. He's writing in from Calgary as well, up in Canada. So, John, we wish you, if he's working with underprivileged kids, obviously he does like children. He's played football, so it sounds like it would be a good fit. Get on with a coach somewhere. Hopefully he's as nice as Coach Harvey Hyde and advance your career that way. So best of luck to you, John. Let's see. We're going to have a voicemail question, Coach. This one is from Kevin.
Hi, my name is Kevin. I'm calling from Southern California. This question is for Gerard. Gerard, I was wondering, when you're looking at, when these coaches are looking at recruiting kids, does it hurt a kid's stock if he goes to a high school that only allows him to play on one side of the ball, where they have to choose offense or defense? Do the coaches really take that into account when they're recruiting a kid? And if you were giving advice to a kid just starting off, would you definitely select a school that allows you, its players, to play both ways? I appreciate your time, and hopefully you can answer my question. Thanks.
So that was actually for Gerard. We're not going to have Gerard on the podcast this week because we're going to talk all about USC playing Hawaii. But, Coach, I thought you might be able to answer that question about recruiting kids, you know, the high school kids that would only play on one side of the ball.
No, I want to be honest with you. Obviously, this parent's very concerned as far as making sure his kid gets an opportunity to play and demonstrate the type of abilities he has. Myself is, you know, coaches, if they have the abilities, coaches are going to play them on both sides of the football. You know, some kids just don't have the mentality or the intensity that it takes to play on defense. Be reckless, throw your body around. They just don't have that personality. They have an offensive personality. They're more into the schemes of things and remembering plays and so on, and they don't have the personality of what a defensive player is. So, you know, some people's personality, size and speed, just fit offense or defense. And a lot of times you don't see players going both ways in high school. Normally, at a smaller school, when an athlete is such a great athlete, then you see that athlete going both ways. Why? You can't afford not to have him on the field because he's just too good. But in most cases, you try not to have athletes go both ways. Now, if the kid is a great athlete and you can forecast him into playing defense, but he's playing offense. You do that because he can run. To play on the defensive side of the football now, no matter what position you are, you've got to be able to run. So if you play on the defensive side of the ball, if you're a defensive lineman, you got to be big, powerful, and quick, and be able to move laterally and hold your ground. If you're a linebacker or any type of defensive end, or if you're playing the secondary, hey, you got to run sub-5, or you're not going to play Major Division I football. So a lot of that is gauged on the physical abilities of an individual, the kid. Now, you can play offense or play the offensive line and not have to run. But because it's so much of a position blocking and quick feet and how to use your hands and your arms, how long your arms are, and all these different things that you can evaluate a player, well, you could be a great offensive lineman, a great All-American offensive lineman, and you might never smell it down on defense because you're just not that type of player. You don't fit on the defensive side of the football. So I would say that I wouldn't select a school because someone's going to let you go both ways, because I don't know if that will help you either, because you're not getting better either at one position, but you're having to learn two positions. I would go where they have a great coaching staff, or send my son where they have a great coaching staff, where the coaches care about the kids, where the kids are going to learn, where they're treated like men, they're going to be disciplined, and they're going to have the opportunity to be successful. I think that's what it's all about. I wouldn't just send a kid, or a coach promises me that we're going to play your kid both ways, and then it doesn't happen, and then you're all upset, and your kid's all upset, and you feel like your kid got screwed, and all this and that. So go where it best fits for your kid, where he's going to be around his friends and so on. And if you're a great player sticks out. Doesn't make any difference where you go. You're going to stick out because coaches are not going to overlook you.
All right. Well, Kevin, thanks for that question. Hopefully Coach helped you out there. Let's talk a little running game, Coach. I know you like that. Evan wanted to know, with Mark Tyler as the starter and Alec Bradford as the primary backup, how do you think C.J. Gable, how much do you think C.J. Gable is going to play this year? And maybe, Coach, just kind of talk about what you think this running back rotation is going to look like. We're all pretty curious.
Well, I'll tell you, I think Mark Tyler deserves this opportunity. He was as good a football player as I saw coming out of high school as far as a running back. He should be a superstar. He had that type of making when he was at Oak Christian. I think Sam Bradford is a great player, a great athlete, too. I think he could have been a great linebacker, too. Mark Tyler was a linebacker, but I don't think he'd have been a great linebacker in college football. But I think Sam Bradford could have been. So here's where we're getting back to that type of situation. I think he's the type of guy that if given enough times as far as carrying the football, he's a combination of a power back, and plus he has great speed. I think he can run over you, too. I think he's an outstanding football player. In the old days when they ran the eye and he carried the ball 26 times a game or 30 times a game, he'd have been an All-American. And Bradford might have been, too. But I think that both of them are a great combination, 1-2 combination. I really do. You're not talking about Dylan Baxter. You're not talking about Stanley Havili. You're not talking to C.J. Gable, McNeil, all these others that go along with these, because they're all great athletes. But I think that what's been great about this coaching change is every player has had an opportunity to prove themselves again. I mean, and here you have two actual true freshmen starting, which I think is tremendous because the best players are playing, the best players are on the field, and I think that's what's important. Kids really know who the best players are, and if you ask a kid, who's the best receiver, or drop it in this envelope and don't put your name on it, you had 10 receivers voting, they would tell you who is the best receiver. They know. And so they know who the best quarterback is. I would say the running back situation, the skilled positions at USC are as good as any teams in the country. I think quarterback-wise, I tell you, Mitch Mustaine, if given an opportunity, and who knows, maybe he will turn out to be a superstar. Mitch Mustaine will be a number 2 draft choice in the NFL draft this coming year, as maybe Bradford will be, or Tyler will be, or when their time comes, and C.J. Gable. But you got to wait for your opportunity, and when you're given that opportunity, I tell you, Mark's been waiting for this a long time. He's going to be a little nervous. He might drop a pass or do something that might scare him as far as his future, but I think he'll look forward to, and I think everybody on the football team, this is a great, great demonstration. If you work hard in a new program, anyone can have the opportunity of playing, and I like this topic theory.
All right. Well, thanks for that one, Evan. Coach, it's another voicemail question, and this also has to talk. It also talks about players playing both ways, but this is talking about playing both ways at the college level.
Hi, this is Steve from Carlsbad, California. And first off, I want to wish our College Hall of Fame coach, John Robinson, all the best this season in his role as an assistant coach at San Marcos High School, which is one of our neighboring towns here in North San Diego County. My question is for Coach Hyde. Coach, last week, Len Kiffin commented that it's not outside the realm of possibility to have players going both ways in the future because of our scholarship limitations. And I just wanted to get your opinion. As you look at our current roster, which of our players do you feel would be best suited to play both ways without taking away from their overall effectiveness to the team? Thanks a lot. Enjoy the show, guys.
Well, thank you very much for calling in. You know, my feeling is this year you won't see players going both ways, but you'll see players possibly. I'm not saying it depends just how that appeal comes out and the number of scholarships and how many players that they have that they can get in January. They're hoping to get maybe 9 or 10 players in January, where the scholarship count will go against 2010. They're hoping to redshirt a few players. They're talking about redshirting. Well, I don't want to get into that. We'll talk about that later, but they're talking about redshirting a lot of the great players that they have that might not play this year. So you got to find different ways of satisfying your numbers. Robert Woods, obviously, the starting receiver from Sarah High School, is an athlete that's demonstrated that he could go both ways. You've got, when you think about it, let me think. I wasn't ready for this, so.
Well, couple guys they mentioned, Christian Thomas, who moved over from defensive end.
He's done it already.
From tight end to defensive end. He would kind of like to play. You talked about Woods. I mean, there's kind of guys like that. You know, Kiffin was pretty adamant that it would almost be like desperation if they had to do something like that, but knowing that limited scholarships, they might have to do it. And I think I agree with what you said, Coach. It probably wouldn't be this year. If they had to do it, it'd probably be next year or the year after that.
I agree. And maybe this Roby kid that's now playing defense could come in and play something on offense, a slot or a running back if he had to do that.
Even DeAnthony Thomas, he's coming in next year. I mean, he's played a lot of corner, played a lot of running back. There's some options, you know, and players, and maybe you correct me if I'm wrong, Coach, but it seems like all the players I've talked to, I think Steve Smith wanted to do it in the past and some of the other guys, they seem to be like, yeah, I'll play both ways. That'd be kind of fun. Coaches never seem to want to let them do that, though. It seems like the players are into it, just not the coaches.
No, you're right. Marshall Jones could go both ways. Bobby Torn Harris could go both ways if they needed to. I don't think any of the offensive linemen could go both ways. Maybe a couple of the defensive linemen could, but really you don't like to do that because you need to work on offense. There's so many different plays and calls and schemes that you have to do that really takes a lot of learning, and you have a special group of people. There aren't a lot of positions that you play in Division I football that go both ways. I would say the only position that I would consider a player going both ways at, and let's just put it this way, is probably either a corner or safety or a receiver. I think that's the only area that you might have a player go both ways. I don't think a linebacker would go both ways, or a defensive end, or defensive tackle, or offensive lineman, or even a running back you wouldn't have to go both ways. And obviously quarterbacks wouldn't go both ways. So it would be a very select position, and it would be only in a desperate type of situation.
All right, Steve, thanks for that. Let's go to Guy, and he sent this in before Jesse Scroggins was admitted back in the school, but he is now qualified. But when he was out, Kiffin had talked about saying that Baxter could possibly be that number three quarterback if Mustaine and Barkley couldn't go. He wanted me to ask you, Coach, how would that work, meaning how effective could Baxter be without taking very many reps at the quarterback position? Would they simply radically simplify the offense using very little of the playbook in comparison? How do you think something like that would work, Coach?
Well, I don't think that would happen. First of all, you'd have to get down to your third quarterback. And I'll tell you, they have a third quarterback over there, and I know a lot of people don't know much about him, but you do, Ryan. His name is Manoogian, John Manoogian. I'm going to tell you right now, we were talking about it at practice on Monday. I was talking with a lot of people. He would be my third quarterback right now. I'll tell you, he operates. He's a very intelligent kid. He can move the football. He has a lot of respect from the offensive players. He works well with the young players. He's prepared to play. I mean, in my thinking, he's more ready to play than Jesse Scoggins is. I mean, Jesse's not ready to play. But John Manoogian can take you down the field, make the right corrections, and believe me, he can throw the football. He's probably got one of the strongest arms out there. And I'm not saying he's got a better arm than anyone, but he's got a real strong arm. People don't know much about him. He's a walk-on quarterback. I think he's the backup snapper now. And I tell you, they lost a snapper, and John Baxter said, "Can anybody snap out here?" And John Manoogian says, "I can snap. I snapped in high school." He's now the backup snapper for the USC Trojan football team. So he's an intelligent kid. And personally, I think Dylan Baxter is a Wildcat type of guy, if they were going to go to that. But they're not a Wildcat team. They're not going to go entirely to that. I think Dylan Baxter will play what he plays, and I don't think it'll ever get to that situation. But I tell you, Mitch Mustaine's a great player. And if given an opportunity to get in there and play, I think everyone will see why he's won so many football games as a high school player and when he was at Arkansas.
Cool. All right, Coach. Well, thanks. Yeah, John. John's a strong-armed kid, and Ronald Johnson works out with him after practice all the time. He loves the heavy ball that Manoogian throws. So I think he's definitely a kid. He knows the offense really well. So I would guess he would be the third guy going in. We'd have to see what the coaches would do. Hopefully it doesn't come down to something like that. But that would mean a couple guys would get injured, but we'll see what goes on there. All right, so David has a question. Coach, given everything that's happened in the last 8 months, what would you tell these guys if you were in that locker room on Thursday?
Well, I probably couldn't say it on this show or any show, okay?
Okay.
Because that's why a lot of times my locker room was locked before the game, was I would tell it the way it is. But I would have to explain to our team that we're going to make a statement this year. And our statement is, we're taking no prisoners. And I'd make a statement saying, we are SC. We will never change under what they try to do. If they can't beat us regularly, they can't beat us with sanctions either. And, of course, Lane Kiffin can't say this because it would sound very arrogant and cocky and everything else and be bulletin board material for people and so on, and the NCAA would be upset and everybody else. I would say every one of our games are a bowl game. I would have trophies made for every game that we played, and I would show them what we were playing for. It would be the Hawaii Bowl this year. This game, the next bowl game, would be the Cavalier Bowl. Then we'd have the Golden Gopher Bowl, and I'd be putting them up every week in our office or somewhere when we won. We would have a bowl game every week rather than just one bowl at the end. And I would get us all together and say, this is our group. The players that have left, they're great players, but they didn't want to go through this with us. We're in the trenches together. I've got your back. You get my back. And let's do what we have and what we've worked for. We have 1 hour today, 1 hour to prove who we are to the state of Hawaii. We'll have 1 hour next week and 1 hour. We have 13 hours. That's all, 13 hours, one long day to demonstrate we are SC. And I think that's what we are, and that's what we're here for, and that's why you stayed here, and that's why you came here. And we've got your back, and you have our back. And let's go out there and have fun. Play not one game at a time, one play at a time, and make it a Trojan play. Remember, the football field is the same size no matter where it is. It's what you do on it. And today we have an opportunity of proving to the world that you can do what you want to try to do to us, but it isn't going to make any difference. Because it's not a size of our body, it's the size of our heart and our will. And today we're here to demonstrate that to a national TV audience. And I'd say, let's get ready to go, guys. I'll tell you when we're, going from there.
Coach, I don't have any shoulder pads, but I'm really fired up for my softball game tonight. All right. I'm going to listen to that. I'm going to play that again right before I play. This is good stuff.
Thank you. I mean, and I couldn't say that I wouldn't say it in those words either.
No.
I'd add a little of me in it. You know what I mean?
A little more color. That's
good. A little bit more, yeah. There'd be a few bleeps.
Well, you know, to me, a lot of times, all the radio shows I've done recently, people ask about, you know, how the team's going to do. I think, like, what you just said there is really meaningful, that it's going to be, you know, people are questioning how well Coach Kiffin can coach and see how the offense does. I think that's all well and good. You got to see what he can do, because his record hasn't been that great. He hasn't been that many places. He's really got to try and get things rolling with USC. But I think his biggest challenge is going to be keeping these guys in mentally, because it is like a bowl game every week. There isn't one at the end of the season. You can't let these guys get down if they lose a game early. Things could spiral out of control. I mean, for me, one of his biggest challenges is going to be just keeping these guys mentally ready each week.
Just remember, you know, he's been tough on these kids. But I want you to know, I love football practices the way he's been practicing football. I don't know if I said this on this show. I've been on so many different shows. But when you go out there, everybody brings a briefcase. They're going to work. They're not out here to, you know, say hi to mom. They can call mom later. They're not out here to please the crowd that came to practice. They're out here to work and become a better football player and become a better football team. And I see that. Now, they may not win as many games as some of the seasons before, but they'll try to improve themselves to the best of their abilities. There's always the injury factor. There's luck, you know. Great teams make their own luck. But I think that this team, you can always get easier when you start as a new football coach. But you can't start easy and then get hard. You've got to start hard, and you can always let up a little bit. And I think this team needed the discipline. It needed to bring back structure. It needed to bring back that football is a team sport. And I think it's back there now, and it isn't just one individual. It's everyone now as a coaching staff and as a football team. I think it got a little bit carried away into a reality show. Yes, everybody loved it, including myself. I was drinking the Kool-Aid too, okay? But I think now, after what's happened, you had to come back and make it what it is, a football program, which represents the university. And I think everyone involved has done a great job.
All right. Coach, well, before I let you go, what are your thoughts on the game? How do you think this is going to play out? You don't have to give a score unless you want to, but how do you think everything's going to play out tomorrow night in Hawaii?
Well, let me tell you, I coach at the University of Hawaii, and I am very up to date on the Polynesian kids and how they play. I'll tell you, football in the state of Hawaii is absolutely huge. There's nothing bigger than football in the state of Hawaii. And they really have tough kids. One thing about the University of Hawaii football program is they have a lot of local kids who stay at home and really have a lot of pride in the state. They will not give up. They will not quit. They are going to hit you. They're going to swarm you. They are family there. Everyone knows everybody. Everybody in the family will be in the stands. It is a family atmosphere. And they are really looking forward to this football game. And they will not quit. This is a team that will not quit. They will play. They will hit you. So you better go prepared, getting ready to get hit. Because they're not just going to hit you with a hammer. They're going to hit you with a sledgehammer. Because they're very prideful people. They're very friendly, very beautiful people. But they love the game of football. They play hurt. They play with a great deal of emotion and pride. So I think their defense will be better than last year. I think their football team will be better than last year. They have four very good receivers. They have a quarterback that's returning. I think the question mark in their team is their offensive line. So I think that it's going to be very important that the USC defense plays well and tackles well, because they throw the ball in the seams in the open field area. So you can't miss tackles or they get big plays on you. So they make the run go off of the pass. They're definitely a passing football team. So you're going to have to stay, keep their team off the field, their offense, by your offense. So the best defense for this game is USC's offense. And can they run the football against the defense of the University of Hawaii. That's what it comes down to. Can they run the football? They've got to be able to run the football, and they got a good defensive front and some linebackers that can swarm you. So we'll see what happens with this game. I'm not going to predict a score, but they always ask me this in the pregame show, and I hate it when they ask me that score because I couldn't even predict my score when I played, okay? I didn't even have a chance. Didn't have a thought. All I wanted to do was win. And I think that's what the attitude will be with the Trojans.
All right. Well, Coach, I hope you enjoy the game, and now we're kicking off college football. I just want to stay home all weekend and watch as many games as I can. I'm sure you'll do the same thing. But thanks for coming on, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you very much, Ryan, and all of our people out there. Thank you very much for giving us these questions. I enjoy answering them. And remember, it's just an opinion. My opinion, nothing is, you got yours too. So if you disagreed with us, I'm sorry.
All right. Well, thanks to you, Coach. Thanks to sctickets.com. We'll be back in 30 seconds. We've got Dan Weber, who is in Hawaii. We'll talk to him from the islands, get the lowdown of what's going on over there when USC takes on Hawaii tomorrow night.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287. 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concert, sports, and theater. We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. We are joined in this segment by Dan Weber, uscfootball.com beat writer, who landed in Hawaii last night. A plane was a little delayed, but he got there over to the islands. He's going to be covering the game for us on uscfootball.com. Dan, thanks for joining us. How's Hawaii?
You know what? It's so hard to get used to. I mean, if you grew up in the Eastern time zone, I was on the far western end of the Eastern time zone, right outside of Cincinnati. With the Pacific, the West Coast was 3 hours, ahead of, or basically 3 hours behind us. So you could deal with that. What's so hard to imagine is that there's a place that's 3 hours behind the West Coast. It just doesn't seem possible to be in a place that's, basically 6 hours, west of home. So I always have the adjustment. Whenever you come to Hawaii, you just keep thinking, can this place really be 3 hours, behind the West Coast? Because the game's going to start at 5, and, it's really a late game for you guys at 8 o'clock, and it's going to be, 11 o'clock for the East Coast. So it's an adjustment that you never quite make, I don't think. I think you have to live here a long time to get used to the three-hour time zone difference from the West Coast.
Now, you might get some... East Coast fans watching.
The sun is just coming up here, as a matter of fact.
Oh, okay. Well, I think you might get some East Coast fans watching because it is opening night of college football, so they might just be so amped up to see some games that they don't mind that this one starts at 11. They might watch it till 2 in the morning. Who knows?
Oh, I think it's a good time slot, actually, because I think it's like the caps off the day, and people have been trying to watch this game and that game and whatever. From that standpoint, I think it really works well for USC, and I know that Hawaii people are excited because this is their one exposure shot, for the year, and they love it. I mean, they were, really, really, really worried that they were going to lose this game, when the NCAA sanctions came down. And so I think, they're thrilled to death. This game means a lot for them at Hawaii and for their program. I mean, this is really important for their recruiting. So, you get the sense that they're not so worried about how the game turns out, whether good, bad, or indifferent. They really just think that, their program needs to be on national TV playing somebody pretty good so that they can, have people think about them and, recruits possibly consider them, put them in, in their, potential, well, I might consider Hawaii.
All right. Well, hey, let's. We're going to talk about Hawaii specifically in a little bit. We We got a bunch of questions. Podcast@uscfootball.com is our email address, or you can call us at 206-888-6755. Leave us a voicemail and we'll play that. We do have a voicemail question for you, Dan, coming up a little bit later. But I want to get a couple team questions first, and then we'll talk about Hawaii specifically. Matt wrote in, and it's kind of an interesting question. Is SC still one of the top three or four most talented teams in the country? And if so, do you see them remaining that way? I thought that was interesting, Dan, just because there is a lot of talent on this team, even though they're kind of thin. There's still five-star guys everywhere. I mean, are they still an elite team as far as talent goes, in your opinion?
Well, you know, I would think if you just took recruiting stars, I would think they're the number one team in the country. If you took all the high school recruiting stars, averaged them out, and look at USC's kids that are going to play in this game, I don't think anybody's got a higher-ranked team. Now, you know, whether you trust those recruiting stars or not, I don't know. If you look at USC's incoming class, for example, the lowest rated defensive back was Nickell Robey. Well, you know, some of us, we look at Nickell Robey and think, wow, you know, has USC brought in a better freshman, kid that's certainly cornerback? I don't know. But so, you know, whatever you think of those five stars, I mean, there are a lot of five-star, five-year seniors at USC who, you know, this is going to be their chance to prove that, you know, those rankings were right on the money. But I'd say if you look at on paper, absolutely USC. I think the numbers would say that USC probably still is the most talented team in the country according to recruiting rankings. According to productivity last year, the last couple of years, probably not. So it's just a matter of, you know, how would you rank them? Look at USC against Oregon. If you looked at how many, I think we looked it up once. USC has more four- and five-star players, I think, basically, than the entire rest of the Pac-10.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no comparison, over the years. So, we'll see. That's a great question, though.
All right. Well, thank you for that one, Matt. This next one's from David. He's a USC fan since 1961. So that's quite a long time.
Wow.
Thanks for writing in, David. He had a question about Woods, Prater, and Ambles, all true freshmen, and they're all listed at split ends. And I think actually Kiffin had Woods behind Ronald Johnson at flanker at first, but they were so special that they moved him over to split end so he'd get a chance to start. He wanted to know, with Woods appearing to beat out Butler, in effect screwing up the depth chart because, you know, they put all those true freshmen at split end, should Ambles maybe be moved over to the flanker spot for now? That would give Woods and Ambles both experience on the main two receiving positions and give them flexibility for the future. What do you think about how the freshmen are lined up there at receiver?
You know what? I wouldn't hold those positions too much to what they're saying on paper, because as Lane had said, you know, normally the Woods' spot is the bigger, stronger guy, and here you've got maybe the fastest guy in the team at that spot, and he's only 185 pounds. They're really just going to get guys out there. And if you go watch practice, guys are in and out and in and out, and they're all getting, you know, opportunities. And Butler, as everybody who saw practice last weekend, the best performance of his entire career at USC on a three-touchdown day, and the fourth one was up for grabs on a pass interference. I don't know that they're really holding, so much to the distinctions between the two positions. I mean, I think Ronald Johnson's clearly, going to be the veteran athlete, speedball guy that they're going to depend on taking it, lots of yards after the catch and things like that, that they're not going to probably ask the, put the other guys in those positions as much. But I think you're going to see a lot of mix and matching and guys, when you've got you know, three wide receivers and things like that, you're going to have guys all over the place. So I wouldn't worry about who's lined up behind who and where and what combinations are in there. I think they're doing a pretty good job. I don't know that in the last couple of years they've done as good a job at kind of mixing and matching and working guys in there and getting them enough opportunities. I think this team will do that. I think Lane, you know, as the head coach and also the play caller, I think has a, and, you know, the fact that he's in the huddle on everything they run, you know, on the field and all that, I think, you know, you'll see a sense of, you won't have to worry quite as much as maybe you did in the last couple of years about guys kind of getting lost behind another guy at a particular position. I think they're all going to get plenty of opportunity.
All right. Now, JC had another receiver question. It was about Kyle Prater, and people have asked me a lot about this too, about the Kiffin mentioning that, you know, he could likely redshirt this season, but he said Kyle Prater looked the most impressive receiver of the three from the 7-on-7 tapes over the summer, and he obviously looked good in the spring. What do you think about what he did in fall camp recently, and is he getting healthy again?
Well, he does look healthier. I will say that. And you know, what you watch him is you just watch him day after day. What does he look like? You know, say he's had a good day and say he's run deep routes and things like that. Then you want to see, okay, what's he look like the next day? And that was kind of his problem, I think, certainly in the fall. Certainly in the spring, I think, with the hamstring. It was hard to get it loose and have him be able to go day after day after day. It's a different kind of a problem in the fall. One of the things he did is he just took a helmet on the thigh. And what you notice with him is they list him at 6'5". He looks like he's bigger than that. And he's kind of a, you know, he's a strong and quicker than you think. Jumps really well, as Lane said, best hands on the team. I mean, that's saying something when you just say that right away. But he is a kind of, and the word might be gangly a little bit, he kind of is unprotected in some ways because he's so big. I mean, he's 215 pounds, but when he's up in the air, he's still a young kid, and he does take, you know, a lot of different blows, and I think, you know, there's a way of learning to get your body into, you know, the ability to run the way they ask these kids to run, and you're coming right out of high school, and even though he had spring practice, I think it was just a matter of growing into his body and learning how to handle it at the speed and, you know, with the force that you get hit at this level. And I just think it was a kind of a culmination of things that didn't allow him, you know, to have the day after day after day work at the top level that would put him, you know, right in there with the other guys. And the other guys would come in and, you know, Woods and Ambles just like gangbusters and Bryce Butler as well. And you know, you've got a Brandon Carswell back and Devon Flournoy and they really have a lot of guys that can run and catch the ball and, you know, maturing guys. And I thought the key thing that Lane said was it's been a result of a number of conversations with Kyle and his parents. And I think his dad has been really, a sharp guy involved in, was very impressed with him, when he came out in the spring, a football guy who really seems to get it, you know, what's best for Kyle and all that. So if I were, you know, some of the fans who really have extremely strong feelings about how this should go down, I'm thinking probably as much as we like to make those highlights and, you know, available and how good they look and how much you can tell about those highlights, you still probably can't tell anywhere near as much as, say, Lane and John Morton and Kyle's dad and Kyle himself in terms of where he is and where he wants to be and where he should be and all that. It always surprises me a little bit how strongly held people have in terms of their, you know, feelings about who should be playing or what they should do with a certain guy or whatever. And I know that's great for our business and it's great for us. But I probably would just, you know, not have any really strong, you know, we see him every day, and we're not sure exactly maybe what the best thing is because we haven't sat down and talked to him about it in that way. And so, you know, I think I like the approach. I like the fact that they're talking to, you know, his parents are talking to Kyle, that he's involved in this. I think the one part of the equation that you notice when you see him play is he's just, he's a young kid and a big, big, big body with wonderful skills. And I know that's tempting to people, but for example, you look at him as a jump ball receiver. But, you know, this team has three or four jump ball receivers. You've got, you know, you've got...
Like Osberry and Cameron.
Playing well. You've got Jordan Cameron. You know, you've got Red Ellison. You got Blake Ailes has made some plays. But you really have a Cameron and an Osberry that they, you know, really don't mind at all throwing the fade routes in the end zone, for example. So there isn't the same kind of... maybe USC doesn't have the same kind of need as somebody else that doesn't have a 6'5 receiver. You know, they've got a couple of guys that they feel really comfortable, you know, both seniors, you know, and throwing jump balls to, you know, in the end zone. So I think they're proceeding exactly correctly with Kyle, you know, at this point in time. But, you know, it's something that, and I don't think it's written in stone. You know, if he ended up playing in a few weeks, it wouldn't shock me at all.
All right. Well, thanks for that question, JC. We got another one. We're going to do a voicemail question here. This is on the freshman numbers, Dan. There was a lot of talk about, you know, different, you know, players getting numbers that they didn't want or whatever, or numbers they wanted if the freshmen were going to get them. So here's a question on the freshman numbers for you.
Hi, love the show. I'm kind of a numbers guy, and I remember at the beginning of fall camp, there was an article written about the freshmen having to earn their numbers. I think it was Nickell Roby that wanted number 21, and I hadn't heard anything about him getting that number. Obviously, I assumed that he would have earned it. And any other numbers that may be reassigned, if there's any information on that, I would greatly appreciate it. Thanks. Love the show.
What do you think, Dan?
Okay. You're talking to a not numbers guy. That's a numbers question for a not numbers guy. I guess I really am big into, I like the idea that USC doesn't put names on the back of the jerseys. I was looking at a video the other day of UCLA introducing their new look jersey, road jersey, and they had a very description of, they've got a very small little UCLA logo on it, and then above the big name. And I thought, you know, I like it that there are no names on the back of the USC jersey. And I kind of downplay kids wanting a particular number. You know, you just want them to be wearing the, you know, the USC jersey and not worry. And I didn't get the sense, you know, that that was a big, big issue, you know, for Nickell. And if there was a place that I wasn't crazy about, you know, how things were going with USC, it was the idea that there was a focus on kids coming out of high school who really wanted a particular number, thinking, what the heck have you done to earn a number? You know, you're a high school player. Come on. And, you know, almost like, well, I want that number because so-and-so wore it. And, you know, you think, well, you know, play it down or so before you want to get into, you know, the same number as some guy that's, you know, an all-pro who helped USC win a national championship or two or something like that. That's my take on it. I don't get this. I just get the sense, like a kid like Nickell Roby, he's just thrilled to get a chance to go out there and play. And I'm guessing, what, number 21, was that Deion Sanders?
Yeah.
That's just off the top of my head. And I don't blame him. I mean, I did a traveling college football Hall of Fame tour of the country. I was telling who was talking about Deion Sanders, Sherry's right the other day. And one of our sponsors was Kodak. And it was the year that Deion Sanders had three of the most remarkable combination, I guess, kickoff return and an interception return and some kind of a reverse play. Three of the most unbelievable plays I've ever seen in college football. And we would show those highlights to people all over the country. And people who hadn't seen them were just like, their jaws would drop. And he'd say, oh, my gosh, look at that, you know. And he did do some unbelievable things. And if I were a kid from Florida, I probably would want that number, too, if I were playing a cornerback. But, my feeling is, I hope the numbers thing is de-emphasized a little bit, even though our numbers guy probably doesn't like to hear that. That's just a personal take on it. Haven't heard much numbers talk. For me, that's a good thing.
All right. Well, thanks for that question. If you want to leave us a voicemail and we can play your question on the podcast, it's the number 206-888-6755. That caller didn't leave their name or anything, but if you want to leave your name and short question, we'd be happy to answer them, and we can hear your voice over the Peristyle podcast. That's kind of fun. Here's a regular email question, Dan, from Cameron. It's also having to do with Nickell Robey. He's referring to something that Gerard talks about sometimes on the podcast, that a lot of times certain states, and Texas was one of them, where you have players that they've been playing football forever, and they seem to be more of a finished product coming out of high school than a lot of the California players who seem to be a little bit more raw. He wanted to know, do you think this is the case for Nickell Robey, or do you think that there's not really a ceiling there, that he really does have, he can still grow as a player coming here at USC?
It's a good question. You do think, you know, that Florida kids, I would guess there's more of an emphasis on spring football. You know, they used to, kid in the Southeastern Conference when we were, was a sports editor and what have you, and you'd, some of the Southeastern Conference, you'd go to a newspaper convention and meet the sports editors, and they'd talk about, yeah, we got two seasons down here, regular football and spring football, you know, and, they play, you know, they would call off, in some of the SEC, states, they'd call off, track and baseball and all the spring sports just so they could have spring football. So those kids get to play, and that's when, you know, when they changed the rule about recruiting, head coaches couldn't go down there and recruit, because like when Pete Carroll would show up at a spring football game, you know, there's thousands of people at the game. It was like a real game. And, a kid like Nickell Robey, I mean, he's played against speed. He's played against wide open offenses. He's played against spreads. He's played, in situations. Although I don't think there's that much difference in terms of speed and wide open offenses in that. You've got great weather in both places. You've got lots of good athletes. You might not quite have the same kind of absolute, the only thing in town that matters is football. Because there are a whole lot of other things that are, going on in California schools. But I don't think the California schools, I don't think they're that raw, that much behind. I think, there's really been a lot of good. I just think, that's one of the things. I think I was a little surprised when I came to the West Coast, is I thought California football was far more advanced than I think we realized. If you look at some of the recruiting rankings on some of the different services, you might think there is no other place in the country except the southeastern part of the U.S. When you look at some of the recruiting rankings. But I don't think I would never use the word we're raw. But there might be kids like a Nickell Robey who are just really much more finished products. They've seen so many more things. And they've been experienced with him, but I do think he's the kind of kid, because of his special skills, his physical talent. I don't know if he's going to, he'll grow anymore or not. He'll get stronger, I'm sure. I don't know that he can get a whole lot quicker, but he's just a remarkable kid. I mean, to have gotten that kid out of Florida, just kind of an unbelievable, effort by Monty and Lane to have spotted him and realized how good he was. And I think that's the response of Nickell, was these are the guys who realized how good I could be. And he stuck with them. But I don't think there's that much difference between the Florida schools and the California schools or the style of football. You couldn't sell me on that one. Nope.
All right. Next one up is from Justin. He says he's in the Evil Empire, a.k.a. Notre Dame country. Just want to get an update on Patrick Hall and what was going on with that whole situation.
Boy. You know, all we can guess is Patrick was just, you know, he was a presence every so often, and you notice him, and, you know, he got on the field a little bit, and then, you know, you noticed that they were going to, you know, give him a shot at offense because he can, you know, he's got tremendous physical skills and all that. But he just, you know, and I think Gerard made a really good point in responding to somebody this week. If you go to a USC practice, you see DJ Morgan, for example. You see him doing everything he can do, beginning of practice, end of practice, after practice. You see him working until, you know, he ends up with a ice on his knee and all that. He's very obvious in trying to work his way through his knee rehab and get himself back to, you know, that great athlete that he is. What you didn't see with Patrick, you just didn't have that sense of Patrick being there and being part of the process as much. And whether it's been a more difficult road, you know, for him, you know, getting, you know, injured, you know, in fall a year ago, and then, you know, not coming in until the, you know, the middle of the year, and whether they're, you know, it's been academically, you know, he's had, you know, have, you know, some adjustments there, and I know they're keeping him on full academic service, and they, you know, haven't given up on him, but I think USC's in a position now where they really, really have to be careful and selective, and they have to have kids who feel about USC like, you know, this is all that matters to them. And, you know, as Lane said this week, what a privilege it is. They think, you know, we've got the best college football program in America, and it's such a privilege if, you know, we're offering you a scholarship and we're giving you a scholarship, and we really need you to, you know, respond and reciprocate and really be part of this. And at this point in time, and, you know, USC's in a position where they can't go for any reaches. They can't, you know, say, boy, I hope he comes around, or, boy, you know, they really need you to come around. And Lane, you know, said 99% of our kids are just so excited and committed and to be here. I think it's one of the great untold stories is the fact that despite the NCAA sanctions and despite the NCAA's, you know, get out of jail free card and all that kind of thing for kids and encouraging transfers and trying to kind of, you know, decimate the USC program, USC hasn't lost a single kid who really, really was a, you know, a valuable kid. DJ Shime would have been a really nice, just because he was such a good kid and a versatile athlete and all that. But they haven't lost a single guy that they absolutely needed to stay in the program. And those are guys that have all made the choice to stay here. And I think they need Patrick, you know, to make that kind of a choice and that kind of a commitment. And I think he's going to get a chance to see if he can make that kind of a choice. But I don't think he had made it so far. And I'm guessing, you know, there are rehab issues and schoolwork issues, all of those things that are hard for a kid, you know, who's been a great athlete to deal with when he can't play in games anymore and he can't do the things that he, you know, wanted to do. And it's kind of a lonely, you know, deal, rehabbing. It probably can be very valuable over the course of an athlete's, you know, lifetime if he handles it. But, you know, a lot of that comes down to you've got to make a choice. And I guess that's what we're going to see about Patrick Hall is, you know, what choice does he make? And, you know, there are, you know, different feelings out there from people about, you know, what they think, you know, Patrick Hall, you know, is going to do. And I guess, you know, we're going to find out.
All right. Well, Justin, thanks for that question there, and keep your head above water there in Notre Dame country. One last thing before we let you go, Dan, and get out there and enjoy the sun and sand in Hawaii. What are you expecting tomorrow? I mean, you've been out here, you know, you've been at every practice. We've been out there watching this team. It's going to be new with new coaches, and even though they're great coaches and even though they're great players, you're not really sure how everyone's going to come out and play. What are you kind of expecting to see Thursday night when they take on Hawaii?
Well, I expect to see exactly what Lane expects to see, and what he said the other day when he was asked that question, he said, we have No idea. So we don't know enough. We don't have enough information. We haven't done enough, game-type work. We haven't done enough tackling. We haven't done enough run blocking. We haven't then, been hit enough to know how we're going to take care of the football. He said, kind of the direction of how you would advance this game is that I think we'll be rested. I think we'll be strong. I'm quoting Lane now. I think we'll be strong. I think we'll be able to play fast. I think we'll know what to do. Whether we can do it? Nah. As things like, I think if I'm a USC fan, I want to see special teams. And Lane says, so do I. He said, hey, we go for 45-minute walkthroughs on special teams. It better pay off. But we'll see. I think it's going to be interesting. He said, I got my other coaches standing over there while we're going through 45-minute walkthroughs to start practice on special teams. And he said, that's my call. He said, I want to see us play with the same kind of athleticism and enthusiasm and excitement, as we do on offense and defense on special teams. But I think this is why I was telling somebody else, I think this is why we love sports. It's the great reality TV show of our lives, and it's been that way our entire, that's why you love sports. You don't know. You're going to watch tomorrow to see what happens. You got to, some ideas. But I think in these situations, you really don't. I don't think USC knows. I'm convinced Lane doesn't know. I think he knows he's done, they've done everything in this situation to be ready. But, you're going to play a team that those quick three-step drops, and they got guys running, and their whole job, on offense is to run away from you. It's like a jailbreak every play. Your guys are going four different directions and trying to, this isn't something, USC's been getting ready for it for 2 weeks. And Lane said, we ought to know what they're doing. We're almost to the point you get bored because we've been getting ready for it for so much. But it's just not what USC does. It's not how they line up. It's not what they kind of have a feel for every day in practice. So it'll be interesting. I'm not sure. I think it'll be fun to watch. I don't know that it'll mean much any particular way unless it goes really badly. But I don't know that the score is going to matter. And the score could be, wild. It's kind of like, you've got 13 games, so they get, it's like a super dress rehearsal. They go three time zones. It's a matter of peaking at the right time in order to, learn how to do this in game week and all of that kind of thing, and learn how to be healthy and learn how to have fresh legs and on all the things, and learn how to do all the things that a new coaching staff has to do during a game. But as to the real specifics, I guess the thing you want to see is, did USC just line up and knock people off the line of scrimmage and run the ball when they want to? They better be able to do that, and they better be able to block people at the point of attack so that they can, whenever they need to do that, they can do it. I want to see Barkley with some payoff in terms of his better athleticism. I want to see how he throws the ball on every pass. And I want to see, how far can a true sophomore come? In most years, if you had a true sophomore starting at quarterback, you'd be like, wow. USC's got a true sophomore starting that everybody just assumes is going to be right there in the, in the mix with, the Heisman Trophy guys that, out of the Pac-10 and with the luck kid at Stanford and, Locker at Washington and all that. And I think it's asking a lot for a true sophomore. But then, they named him captain. His teammates selected him captain. So that's saying a lot, about Matt Barkley. So those would be things I'd focus on. But as to what exactly is going to happen, I'm with Lane. I don't think we've got enough information in terms of playing someone else. I do think they should be able to stop the run. I would be very disappointed if with this front seven, if they have a great deal of difficulty stopping the run. Not that you're gonna, you know, that's a big part of what Hawaii does, but that's kind of the theme for the season, I think, is if they can go back to the time of teams that Pete Carroll had that stopped the run, where you just knew going into the game you weren't going to get a 100-yard rusher, you might not get 100 yards on the ground, and you had to throw the ball. And in the Pac-10 now, you basically, and Lane has talked about this a lot, he's so aware of the fact that the Pac-10 is now a run-first league, and it wasn't that way when Lane was in it, just that short a time ago when Lane was an assistant to Pete. But you look at Oregon, Oregon State, and Stanford, they run the ball first. They need to be able to run the ball. And the Pac-10, you know, will run it right down your throat if they can, as USC fans remember to their dismay from last year, the last couple of years. The one game that cost them the national championship 2 years ago was a game where Jacquizz Rodgers just ran it right up, you know, right up the gut. So if USC can stop the run consistently and force you to throw the ball, I think the secondary, as young as it is, I think the secondary can have a really good year. And they're athletic and they're opportunistic, and we'll see. But I don't know what we'll see tomorrow night.
Yeah, I don't know if any of us do, but we're all going to be tuning in to check it out. Dan, we appreciate it. I hope you enjoy all your time over there in Hawaii. Thanks for all the insight, and we'll talk to you next week after the game, get some post-game reaction.
Okay. Thanks, Ryan. Looking forward to it.
All right. Everyone else, thank you very much for tuning into the Peristyle Podcast. Enjoy all the games, all the college football this weekend. Everyone's been waiting long and long time to get these college football games in. But enjoy the game tomorrow. We will talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.